Aside from the Rambam's explanation of the sin of Moshe and Aaron by Mei Meriva, another explanation is given by Rav Yosef Albo. Rav Yosef Albo was a philosopher who lived between the years 1380 and 1444. And his famous Sefer HaIkrim, in Maimer Dalid, Perek Chav Beis, that's the fourth Maimer, chapter 22, he gives a fascinating, a novel explanation as to what the sin of Moshe and Aaron was at Mei Meriva. He explains that upon hearing Bnei Yisrael's request for water, Bnei Yisrael complaining, we need water. What did they do? Moshe and Aaron ran to the Ohel Moed to go ahead and daven to Hashem. Hashem, what should we do? They're complaining, we don't know what to do. That was their mistake. They shouldn't have ran on the spot, on their own. They immediately should have spoken to the rock and instruct the rock to give forth water, even before being commanded to do so from Hashem. By doing this, they would have demonstrated, they would have shown the Jewish people that Teva, nature, is subject and responsive to the desires and the needs of the people who have emunah and follow the Torah and mitzvos. Someone who embodies Torah, like Moshe Rabbeinu, is in control of nature. He's in control of the Teva. And if Moshe would have taken the opportunity, at that moment, the second they complained, and said, what are you complaining about? We don't have water? Watch this. Rock. Give water. That would have shown this deep idea of Judaism. It would have displayed that towards the Jewish people, that Torah is in control of nature. But instead of taking this immediate action, they sped away to the Ohel Moed, to daven to Hashem. And even though they did that in their great humility, that was what caused them to react this way. Nonetheless, this gave the appearance to Bnei Yisrael as if Moshe and Aaron had no idea how to solve this problem. Or worse, it indicated that they may not have fully believed that the world and nature is subordinate to people who have complete belief in Hashem and embody the Torah. This allowed doubt to creep into the minds of Klal Yisrael as to whether the Torah really has the power to overcome nature. Following their failure, right? They made this mistake. Hashem says, you can rectify it. Go and speak to the rock. That would have somewhat at least rectified that opportunity, that lost opportunity that Moshe and Aaron had at the time. But instead, Moshe and Aaron didn't listen to that commandment of Hashem. And they compounded their original sin by hitting the stone, as they did in Rephidim 39 years earlier, with the hopes that the same result would be achieved like it did back in the day when the water came out the first time 39 years before. But that, again, was a fundamental mistake. There was a fundamental difference between 39 years before at Rephidim, when hitting the rock gave forth water, and this time, in the 40th year of the Midbar, of their travels through the Midbar, where the way to get the water out was through speech. And this is highlighted by a medrash, a fascinating medrash, the Yalkut Shimoni, Dibor Maschil, V'dibartem el Asela, says as follows. It asks, why is it that in Rephidim, Moshe was instructed to hit the rock? And in our Parsha, in Parsha's Chukas, he's instructed only to speak to it. And the Medrash answers with a mashal, a parable, of a young child who, I don't know, let's say, for example, runs into the street. A little kid runs into the street. The parent has to punish him. So what are you going to do? Sit down, honey. Come, Shefala, sit down next to me. You know, it's not good to run in the street. It could be dangerous. A car could come. The 4-year-old has no clue as to what you're saying. They're not intellectual enough. They're not mature enough to process that which you're teaching them. So sometimes, if you have no other way of disciplining a child, you might have to hit them. You have to use some level of force, some form of forceful punishment, in order that they don't endanger their lives. But an older child that does something wrong and has to be rebuked, force, physical force, is for sure not the way to go about doing it. Instead, you speak to them. You reason with them. You try to explain it to them. And that, says the Medrash, is the difference between Rephidim, 39 years before, their force needed to be used, and now, in the 40th year of their travels in the Midbar, where only speech had to be used. And the Medrash continues by saying that Moshe should have learned Torah, a section of Torah, by the rock. Now, there are two questions on this Medrash. First of all, while it's true that regarding educating a child, there is a difference between a young child and an older one in how to go about giving forth a message, but how in the world does that translate to inanimate objects such as stones? Was the stone a baby stone when it was young, 39 years before, now it's an adult stone? I mean, give me a break. The maturity of the stone didn't change. Second, what's this final piece of the Medrash that it states that Moshe should have learnt a piece of Torah by the rock? What does it have to do with the beginning part of the Medrash, with the parable between the young child and the old child? But the answer is as follows. And this is built off of what the Sefer Ikrim, of Yosef Albo doesn't quote this Medrash, but it could be easily understood based on Yosef Albo's explanation. He says, what was the difference between the first year in the Midbar and the 40th? The difference was the Torah wasn't given yet. When the first time in Rephidim, when Moshe hit the rock in order to get forth water, the Torah didn't exist. Since the Torah did not exist yet in the world was not subordinate to anything. And the only way you could create an effect, the only way that you could create a miracle was through force. Something strong, force represents something strong, overpowering, has to go ahead and change nature. But 39 years later, after the Torah was given, nature was completely subordinate to the Torah. And one could easily change the nature by just simply speaking to it. Just like a young child has to be changed with force, but an older child could be more easily changed through words. That is the idea behind the first time the rock gave forth water and the second time. The first time needed force, something to overcome nature. But the second time, nature was already subject to anything that the Torah would want. And someone who embodies the Torah like Moshe, simply speaking to it, would have let forth water. And now we understand the second part of the Medrash, where the Medrash says that by speaking words of Torah, that would have been the best way to show that it's Torah that makes the water come out of the rock. So by Moshe and Aaron missed a chance when they ran away out of despair. We don't know, how are we going to help you? They missed a chance to be able to show the Jewish people that, watch, Torah, I, Moshe Rabbeinu, who transmitted the Torah, I so easily can come, go ahead, and let water come out of here. I don't have to run to Hashem because I have the power to create this miracle. Moshe could have done it on his own. There was a problem. The fact that he didn't do that caused a chilul Hashem. It let doubt into the eyes of the Jewish people. Moshe could have rectified it though by coming back afterwards and spoken to the rock after Hashem commanded him to. But he didn't. He hit the rock, showing that nothing has changed from 39 years ago. Still, in order to get nature, although it'll be a miracle, but in order to get nature to change, you need force. It's not so easy. It's not like the Torah is in charge and the Torah is able to create that change. And this idea, this lesson, that the nature of the world is subject to the will of those who study the Torah, is an important one. So important that the Sefer Ikrim writes, it's an Ikr Gadol El HaTorah V'Shorish El Amuna. It's a fundamental tenet of our Torah and a core principle in our system of belief. And in fact, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh uses this idea to answer a very difficult question pertaining to the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf. The Gemara in Chulin on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph relates that Pinchas ben Yair, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, once needed to pass over the Ginoy River. When he said to it, "Split your waters so I can cross," the river automatically split for him. In light of this Gemara, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh asks, Orach Chaim HaKadosh can be found in Sefer Shmos, Perek Yedalid, Pasuk Chav Zayin, 14:27. He asks why the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf is viewed as unique. If we find that rivers split for the Tanaim as well, big deal. The Yamsuf was a bigger river. Okay, the Ginar River was smaller, but if Tanayim were able to split the rivers, then what's the big deal? What's the big deal that Hashem split the Yam Suf? It's the same thing. He explains, or Chaim HaKadosh answers, that there's a fundamental difference between the miracle of the splitting of the Yam Suf and the splitting of the Ginar River. The splitting of the Yam Suf occurred before the Torah was given. While the episode of Rav Pinchas ben Yair obviously took place in the times of the Tanaim, after the Torah was given. When the Torah was given, Hashem decreed that nature would be subordinate to the Torah and to those who toil in it. And what transpired in the case of Rav Pinchas ben Yair should not be considered, quote-unquote, out of the ordinary. For someone who toils in Torah, this is normal. You could create miracles. But the splitting of the Yam Suf, which occurred before the Torah was given, was truly remarkable and unique that nature would go ahead and change. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, in the Ma'ilas HaSulam, which was found in the Sefer Elios Elio, uses this idea to answer a bomb question, a very difficult question of the Tosfos Yeshanim, one of the Rishonim. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos on Nun Gimel Amud Beis, 53b, the Gemara tells the story of a man whose wife died, leaving him and a young little baby who was still nursing alive. The man couldn't afford a wet nurse, and a miracle was performed for this man, enabling him to nurse his son, the child himself. The father was able to nurse his son. In response to this event, Abaye commented that how inferior is this man for whom the natural order of creation was altered. This is not a chash of a thing. This is not something that's important. Hashem doesn't like to change nature. And if he had to change nature for this man, that doesn't say a lot for this man. Okay. The Tosfos Yeshanim, however, asks that the Medrash tells us that Mordechai Tzadik from Megillas Esther, experienced the exact same miracle, enabling him to nurse Esther after the death of both of her parents. So why wasn't Mordechai criticized similarly to the man mentioned in the Gemara? In addition, Rav Chaim Volozhiner notes that we find several times throughout the Gemara, like we mentioned before, Rav Pinchas ben Yair, that people are performing miracles, Tanaim and Amoraim, yet we never find the Gemara in any of those cases commenting that the person for whom the miracle occurred was inferior. Rav Chaim answers by noting that the Gemara doesn't introduce the story like it does in many other instances, saying, Maisa b'chassid echad, a story with a chassid, a very righteous person. But rather, it refers to this man who nursed his son as an echad, an ordinary man. From ancient times until today, like I'm going to speak out in a few minutes, righteous individuals have always experienced open miracles. In the Gemara and Shabbos' story, however, the father was not known as a particularly righteous individual. In such a case, Abaye considered it inappropriate for the laws of nature to be superseded for such a person. For one who is known to be a great Torah scholar and holy person, an open miracle, such as one mentioned in the Gemara, is not surprising, like Mordechai. Of course it happened for Mordechai to nurse Esther. What? That's not a big deal. But for a stam, an ordinary guy, for nature to be changed for that, that is not something that we look up to. And I'd like to quote two fascinating stories, one even more recent than the other. Just to give some examples that highlight this concept that we've been speaking about, that the Torah is in control of nature. There's a town called Dvinsk. And the town of Dvinsk runs by an extremely large river called, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, the Dvina River, D-V-I-N-A, the Dvina River. Now, because of the size of this river, very strong walls had to be built at the banks of the river in order to protect the city from flooding. In addition, besides the strength and the height of these walls, a very intricate pipe system was made inside the walls so that if the river would ever rise, the water would flow through the pipes and not continue and rise and overflow the walls. However, one year, the current of the river was extremely strong, and the pipes weren't big enough to catch the rising waters. The river was 13 centimeters away from overflowing the walls and flooding the entire city. The people were freaking out, and the residents of Dvinsk were extremely scared, and many actually fled. But the Gentiles of the town went to their priest to ask, Father, give us some advice. Give us some direction. But he himself was also scared stiff and at a loss as to what to do. Finally, he suggested that since the danger is so great, they should go to the rabbi of the Jews and ask the rabbi what he has to say. Who is the rabbi? Rav Meir Simcha of Divinsk, the famous author of the Or Sameach and the Rambam and the Meshech Chachma al Torah. He lived from the years 1843 to 1926. Now, as an aside, there's a book called The Torah Personality, a treasury of biographical sketches collected from the pages of the Jewish Observer. And over there, he writes that this was not an uncommon occurrence. Rather, Rav Meir Simcha developed a reputation as a very holy man amongst all the non-Jews of the city. And his reputation was so widespread that even the non-Jews used to come to him to resolve their quarrels, their differences of opinion. Well, anyway, back to the story. So the head of the city with his entire entourage went to the Beis Medrash of Simcha. Rav Meir Simcha was sitting. The head of the city went to speak to him and explain to him the whole situation. And after hearing all the details, the Rav went to the bridge, which stood over the river, to see what was going on. And by the time he arrived, the waters were only 7 centimeters away from overflowing the banks. Rav Meir Simcha stood facing the river, and he said, "Sar Shel Yam, Officer of the Yam," referring to the force that Hashem points over the sea, "I decree that you should stop rising." But the river continued to rise. Then he said a second time, "I, the Rav of this town, decree that you should stop rising." But it wouldn't stop. He then said a final time, "I, the Rav of the town, decree that you should stop rising. And if you don't, I'll excommunicate you." And at that moment, the waters died down. All the people began dancing, and the head of the city bent over and kissed Rav Meir Simcha's hand. Now, this story was told by Yerushalm Shwadron, the great Magid, who passed away in the year 1997. He writes that the story was told at the Sheva Brachos of his own daughter by Rav Shmuel Elkin, who was standing next to Rav Meir Simcha when the story occurred. Unbelievable. Absolutely incredible that someone, Rav Meir Simcha, someone who embodied the Torah, could tell the river to stop rising. In our times as well, Hagaon Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the great Torah giant of our generation, who lives in Bnei Brak, was writing a sefer on the various halachos of pertaining to grasshoppers. Well, you want to eat a grasshopper? Look at this book. Anyway, he went ahead and he wrote a book on the grasshoppers, and in the process of writing the sefer, it became necessary for him to observe a grasshopper to assist in exactly describing the creature's physical appearance. At that exact moment, a grasshopper leaped before Rav Chaim to assist him in accurately depicting its form. After concluding the sefer, Rav Chaim encountered a nature expert, some scientist, who claimed that he read the book and Rav Chaim's description of the grasshopper was incorrect. And this troubled Rav Chaim terribly, that God forbid he wrote something in a sefer that was built on the wrong metzias, on what really doesn't exist. But once again, at that moment, a grasshopper appeared before Rav Chaim, confirming the absolute accuracy of the description in his sefer. And this is printed in the sefer Minchas Toda on page 10, and now recently was republished, I guess, in the biography of Rebbe Kanievsky, in the Art School biography on page 355, that the Steipel Gaon actually publicized this story. Now, it was interesting when one time my wife said this over at the seminary on a Sunday morning. She gave a class and she spoke about this story about Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and the girls, they all got excited. What are they so excited about? The day before that Shabbos, they were in Bnei Brak on a Shabbaton, and Rebbetzin Kanievsky, all of a shalom, told them this story. Amazing thing. Rav Chaim Kanievsky finishes all of the Torah, Chumash, Navi, Halacha, Gemara, Bavli, Yerushalmi, everything, every single year. Someone who totally embodies the Torah. Nature, grasshoppers, are subordinate to him. He needs it. This is what comes. It happens automatically. And this really teaches us an amazing, amazing thing. Two things. One, our appreciation of the Gedolim, of the Torah giants, how the Torah totally overcomes everything in nature. And second, the value of Torah. We have the opportunity to learn Torah, every word of Torah. When we're learning Torah, we're attaching ourselves to something supernatural, to something that lives in a different plane from the natural way of this world. Ashreinu matol chalkenu. that we have this opportunity, whoever we are, wherever we are, in yeshiva, out of yeshiva, to attach to that, to attach to the Torah, to learn the Torah more, to experience the awesomeness of the Torah above anything over in this world.